I'm now joined by Dave Lavelle, Global Head of ETFs at Grayscale Investments, who of course offers the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, ticker GBTC, nearly $15 billion in that product. Grayscale is also the world's largest digital asset manager overall, currently 18 investment products, some $20 billion in assets. And Dave is now on the line with me from New York. Dave, always a pleasure. Thanks for taking the time.
Nate, how are we doing? You know, I was thinking we should open up by singing Happy Birthday to Spy. What do you think?
You know? Hey, I love it. 30 years old. It's hard to believe. I feel old.
I mean, let's be honest. We both owe a professional debt of gratitude to Spy, don't we? And those that work to make it a reality?
No question. Yes, I owe a huge debt of gratitude towards Spy. And, you know, it's funny. I was looking back. So, you know, you speak about time and, you know, 30 years feels like a long time ago. Believe it or not, Dave, it's been about a year since you were last on this podcast. And I would say quite a bit has happened in the crypto space since then, and certainly with Grayscale. I think I've said before, a year in crypto is like a decade in traditional markets.
I mean, Nate, you and I saw each other at an event in the middle of December, and I think I've aged 3 years since I saw you. So, you know, and it has nothing to do with making sure the holidays happen and getting through the new year. So, it's exciting. And, you know, it's funny when you think about SPY coming to market, it came to market in 1993, and it was something that was envisioned, you know, after the crash in 87. And it took, 6 years to kind of make it a reality. And that type of innovation with ETFs, look, it's the same thing. We're innovating in ETFs with just a different asset class now, and it takes time to get through the regulatory process. It gets time to, you know, make sure that, you know, the appropriate disclosures are there. And so we're kind of going through a similar process, just a different asset class. But it's super exciting. A lot has transpired since I was last on the pod.
Okay, so that's a perfect segue. Let's start with this lawsuit Grayscale filed against the SEC. And I think many listeners know the story here, which is that the SEC continued denying Grayscale's attempt to convert the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust into a spot Bitcoin ETF. Yeah. And at the end of, I believe, June of last year, Grayscale initiated these legal proceedings. Just to reset here, high level for people who maybe haven't followed this quite as closely, just explain the background on this lawsuit.
Yeah, so if we go all the way back to kind of 2017, that was kind of the first iteration of a number of asset managers, including ourselves, attempting to file for spot Bitcoin ETFs under the 33 Act. Kind of fast forward, you know, many of those, proposals were denied. In our case, we withdrew our application knowing that the SEC wasn't ready to really consider that or approve it. But fast forward to 2021, the SEC started to express an openness to consider a futures-based Bitcoin ETF under the 40 Act. And that was citing some additional protections under the 40 Act and, you know, some of the innovations that came along with the ETF rule in 2015, allowing for futures-based products in the 40 Act. And, you know, so in late 2021, the first futures-based Bitcoin ETF commenced trading. And on that very day, we filed our application for a spot-based Bitcoin ETF. And, you know, that was very deliberate. If the SEC was now, you know, comfortable with a futures-based product, it was our belief, it was then, it continues to be now, that if the SEC is comfortable with a futures-based Bitcoin, you know, ETF, that it should be amenable and comfortable with a spot-based product. You know, Nate, we've discussed this at length and at nauseam, but if you're good with the derivative, you should be good with the underlying asset. They are, you know, absolutely and undeniably inextricably tied.
No, and I think, you know, I've been a broken record here. The SEC keeps talking about these concerns regarding fraud and manipulation in the underlying spot market. But these underlying futures that are held by Bitcoin futures ETFs, guess what? They get their pricing from the exact same crypto exchanges as a spot Bitcoin ETF would. So, I would argue, I mean, if there's fraud and manipulation there, it's going to impact futures-based ETFs as well. I mean, I think, you know, I just can't, that's the one area, and I know that's really the nexus of the suit, that I just can't get my head around. Okay, so since Grayscale filed the suit, I know there have been these briefs that have been submitted back and forth, right, between Grayscale and SEC. What can you tell us about that process?
Well, hot off the press. Yesterday, the D.C. Court of Appeals delivered the actual oral argument schedule in the lawsuit. And so, you know, Grayscale, who's represented by Don Verrilli, And then, of course, the SEC attorneys are going to be heard in front of the courts on March 7th, 2023. So that represents kind of the oral portion of the arguments. And what has transpired to date has been the written set of arguments that have been presented to the courts. So the lawsuit is progressing, you know, as designed and pretty swiftly, and we're excited about that. And we ultimately end up having a decision, you know, kind of at the latest in the fall of 2023. But given that the oral argument schedule has been set in kind of that early March timeframe, we could actually get a final decision sooner than that. But most recently, you know, prior to this news yesterday, Grayscale, you know, filed its reply brief on January 13th. And, you know, that really addresses all of the counterpoints made by the SEC. So we put our opening arguments out in written form. SEC replies to those, you know, arguments, and then we have the opportunity to reply to that. So that reply was submitted on January 13th, and we're, we're really confident in the arguments that we have, and we're excited to continue to push this process forward. The beauty of it, Nate, is that given that this is in the courts, it's, you know, based in statute. And so, you know, while there's a little bit of ambiguity around when the dates are going to fall, we know that, you know, this is something that is going to come to the courts, and a decision will ultimately be reached. And we're excited about that.
In terms of counterpoints by the SEC and perhaps,
right,
you know, how the courts will view this, you know, it's interesting. I'm seeing a lot of people who are suggesting the SEC is now somehow vindicated or justified in not approving a spot ETF because of everything we've seen in crypto over the past year, right? FTX, Three Arrows Capital,
yeah,
even Genesis, which I do want to ask you about. I saw a tweet from CNBC's Jim Cramer last week where he was saying, see, the SEC was right. All of the shows, they shouldn't have allowed a spot Bitcoin ETF. Any comments on that?
So first things first, at the end of the day, again, back to statute, this is a case around our belief that the SEC, you know, denied our application and in doing so violated the Administrative Procedures Act. The Administrative Procedures Act is the act that governs, you know, governmental agencies in ensuring that they treat like pieces of business alike. And we believe that that is not the case, given that they have approved a futures-based product, and they have denied our application for a spot product. So that's the first thing that I would say. And again, like it bears mentioning and kind of reiterating, we're looking to pull, you know, our product and pull crypto further into the regulatory perimeter, and products like spot ETFs would, you know, really open up access to Bitcoin. You know, that would be in a more highly regulated wrapper and environment. And so, you know, I actually saw that your response to that tweet, and that was you actually took a different approach and actually kind of diametrically opposed and said, no, it's actually, you know, totally opposed to what Jim had mentioned. But what I would say is that, you know, certainly a lot has happened in the crypto industry since we first filed. A lot of market turbulence, drawdowns, inflation, interest rates, all sorts of extraneous factors that are either in the crypto market or outside the crypto market. It's been a super dynamic time. But our arguments are the same, and it's common sense arguments, and they're compelling legal arguments. And it's a legal process that's based in statute. And despite how you may feel about the SEC's reluctance to approve a spot Bitcoin product, or, you know, current political or social views towards crypto, you know, the reason why we have a court system is to come to determinations that are based on, you know, settling questions around law. So that means that, you know, the events, you know, that have happened, you know, 3AC, Celsius, Voyager, FTX, Alameda, like BlockFi, BCG, Genesis, all these, Gemini, like all of these things are not relevant to what is in front of the court, which is we believe the SEC has acted arbitrarily and capriciously and discriminated against us in denying the conversion of GBTC into a spot ETF. And that's not to minimize some of the, you know, really terrible things that have happened in the marketplace. We feel awful about that. And look, you and I have been around this industry long enough to see different instances of fraud. That's bad. And that decreases confidence in the marketplace. But in this particular case, we are talking about the merits of our desire to convert GBTC into an ETF. We are talking about the Administrative Procedures Act. We are talking about whether or not the SEC was, acting within their, rights to deny this product. And, we believe that we have a very strong case. And we believe that we're being discriminated against.
Dave, I want to move on here, but obviously investors can access Bitcoin futures ETFs. Any thoughts on how those have performed thus far? Because when these first launched, I was certainly out there saying, I can't believe the SEC approved these things and not a spot Bitcoin ETF, because we know with near certainty the futures-based products are not going to track the spot price of Bitcoin. But if you look, they've done a pretty good job so far. Any quick thoughts on what we've seen?
So first of all, we're not anti-futures, based, Bitcoin ETFs. That was a great innovation in the market, and that's been a good step in the right direction towards a spot product. And look, the Bitcoin futures products continue to behave as designed, which is really good for the market. I think we've all debated kind of the structural the structural drawbacks relating to the need to rebalance portfolios and roll the futures exposure as, the futures expiry approaches. And look, the reality that the market has kind of been on a downtrend minimizes some of those, exaggerated, underperformance that can happen when you have an asset class that's really on a prolonged kind of uptrend. So the products are behaving as designed, and that's great. Look, you and I have talked about this also. History has proven that in instances where a commodity can be reliably stored, the spot-based ETP is overwhelmingly preferred by investors of all shapes and sizes. And, that's from the self-directed retail investor to the largest institution, largest institutions in the world. And we really believe that the same will be true for Bitcoin. When you have a commodity that's not able to be reliably or easily stored, wheat, cattle, oil, investors really settle for the futures version of the ETP. And so right now, in the absence of a spot Bitcoin product being permitted by the SEC in the U.S. market, investors are settling for the futures-based ETP, but we feel really strongly upon approval, GBTC's conversion to a spot Bitcoin ETP is going to result in investors really flocking towards the spot product.
All right, Dave, with our remaining time, let's get to the gauntlet portion of our conversation. I feel like every time you're on the podcast, we do this little dance, right, where I have some questions that I have a feeling might not be your favorite, but I know these are questions on listeners' minds, so I have to try and ask them. And as always, you do get a get-out-of-jail-free card that you can use. And by the way, I do think it's important to point out that you could very easily just decline to come on this podcast. You have way more important things to do. And I really appreciate the fact that you always show up. You do these interviews. To me, Dave, that says something. Listeners can draw.
I appreciate the disclaimer, but we are championing transparency. We are championing an open dialogue with our investors, with the community, with regulators. So you have a well-respected voice, and it's a privilege to be able to come on and answer the questions. So we welcome the questions. Let's go.
No, I appreciate that. And we are a little short on time. So I know it's tough with nuance, but maybe 30 seconds to a minute for each of these questions. Again, you can pass. So, okay, first, look, there are some concerns swirling around Digital Currency Group solvency, right? Of course, Digital Currency Group is a parent company of Grayscale. Yep. They're the parent company of Genesis. The question I have for you is, if something were to happen to DCG, are there any risks to the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust itself?
Very simple. No. Business as usual at Grayscale right now. We operate independently with our own management team, financial risk management, protocols, legal, compliance oversight, all of that. We're confident that, Genesis Global Capital's voluntary you know, Chapter 11 filing, not going to impact the operation of Grayscale's business or any of our Grayscale products, including GBTC. So there you have it.
Okay. Another question I keep hearing is, obviously, GBTC converting to an ETF would solve the discount problem. But why can't Grayscale just seek Reg M relief from the SEC and start offering share redemption now, which theoretically would start closing that, you know, 40% discount? Why not pursue Reg M relief?
Yeah. So this is a tough one in 30 seconds, but you ready? As GBTC sponsor, Grayscale's application to convert GBTC to a spot ETF is Grayscale seeking Reg M relief. There have been a lot of people in a lot of different public forums claiming their kind of Reg M expertise. But part of any ETF application includes an application for Reg M relief. And this is the most critical component of an ETF. And it's providing that necessary framework for arbitrage that keeps the ETF trading right at its net asset value. You know, tender offers and other, you know, kind of things that have been purported in again, multiple public forums require regulatory approval as well as approval from shareholders. So there would be a number of different limitations of how a tender offer would work and how it could potentially be carried out by GBTC, pricing, type of payment, timing. So anyone who's claiming or declaring that GBTC can just simply redeem shares today is most likely not a lawyer, not a Reg M expert, and does not understand the complexities of securities law, in addition to tender offer rules. It's complex stuff, and converting to an ETF is getting Reg M relief.
Okay, so on that note, another question, and I'll just tell you, maybe it's a little low budget of me asking this, but again, Dave, this is something that I hear, so I'm going to ask you it.
Yeah.
Some people believe Grayscale's Bitcoin ETF campaign is all marketing. In other words, the reason you're pursuing a spot Bitcoin ETF and going through all of this legal process is to give the appearance that you're supporting investors' interests. But really, the company is better off financially if a Bitcoin ETF doesn't happen, right? You can just continue collecting the annual management fee. Investors can't leave the fund right now. How would you respond to all that?
Well, look, I would first say it's not surprising that people are questioning things generally. There's a lot of trust and confidence that has been damaged. Fraud in the marketplace in any context resulting in investors losing money is really unfortunate and really terrible. And you and I have seen this before. And so I think we're both sensitive to that. And it's going to take time to rebuild that confidence. But as I mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, Nate, ETF conversion has always been the goal since 2013. This product was structured to mimic GLD as a 33 Act Delaware Grantor Trust, so that it could be converted into an exchange-traded product. And so, you know, any sort of suggestion that we're just engaging the PR stunt is really unfounded. And we're going to continue to fight for our investors and for the Bitcoin community and convert this product into an ETP because, you know, that's the best thing.
Okay, last question I have, and this is with a backdrop of the questions I've already asked. Any thoughts on these other fund companies that are publicly campaigning to take over GBTC as fund sponsor? And I'll just tell you, from my perspective, this does appear to be simply a marketing play by these firms. I just don't see the path to how they could actually accomplish this. I've tweeted that out, unless there are some enormous financial backers that come along. But what do you think about these sort of public plots to take over GBTC?
So this is pretty cut and dry. These are meritless claims. And with all due respect, they're ill-informed and they're baseless. All right, this distracts from what's in the best interest of shareholders, which is getting this product converted into an ETF. So Grayscale has absolutely no intention of stepping down as sponsor of GBTC, nor any of our other investment products. And for anybody who is led to believe otherwise, or flat out believes otherwise, I would recommend you review the publicly available trust agreement. The language is spelled out in plain English. You know, according to our public filings, Grayscale must voluntarily bring forth any proposal for change. And there's no way for any shareholders, regardless of their ownership stake, to remove Grayscale as a sponsor.
Well, Dave, we're a little short on time, so we are going to have to leave it there. We're going to have you back on to talk about the Grayscale Future of Finance ETF, ticker GFOF, which, by the way, is up over 50% year-to-date. But again, I really do appreciate your candidness. I appreciate that you show up and do these interviews. You know, I always like to let listeners draw their own conclusions, but I think it says something that you're here. But again, great having you back on the podcast. Thank you for joining me this week.
Thanks so much, Nate. Let's not make it in a year before I come back and visit again, all right?
For sure. That was Dave Lavelle, Global Head of ETFs at Grayscale.